Hello from Movendi International, I am Mike Dünnbier. Warm welcome to the Alcohol Issues podcast. The Alcohol Issues podcast is an original production by Movendi International. It's a show about current alcohol issues of global importance. Through in-depth conversations with policymakers, community leaders, and scientists, we explore alcohol policy issues, discuss landmark scientific studies, and expose the alcohol industry.
Secondhand alcohol harm impacts children really from the start of life.
It's really a neglected problem. No one is measuring it, and even if they were, there is lack of help.
For the third episode in our third season, we discuss the state of the world's children. How can we provide support to children growing up in households with alcohol problems? Seen with the eyes of our children, the world we live in has an alcohol problem. In 2021, UNICEF released the flagship report entitled The State of the World's Children. It explored the mental health of children, adolescents, and caregivers. The report addressed alcohol as a risk factor for mental health of children and young people. Adverse childhood experiences such as violence, abuse, neglect, household alcohol problems are in turn linked to sexual risk-taking, mental health issues, alcohol and other drug use problems, and violence among children and young people, thus perpetuating a vicious cycle. That children have to grow up in homes with alcohol problems is an invisible and silent but massive crisis worldwide. For this podcast conversation to discuss these issues, we have invited four guests to discuss how we can provide support to children growing up in households with alcohol problems. Dr. Joanna Lay is a health specialist in the Maternal Newborn Adolescent Health Unit under the health section of UNICEF in UNICEF's headquarters in New York. Kristina Sperkova is a psychologist and is leading Movendi International as the international president. She is also the president of Movendi in Slovakia, where she's gathering expertise and experience in working for the benefit of children of households with alcohol problems. Mr. Vinyu Srisupachok is a social innovation engineer and project consultant in Stop Drink Network in Thailand, where Vinyu is working for the cultivation of children in Thai communities for positive consciousness and for protection from health risk factors. And Mona Örjes is the president of UNIS, the largest social movement in Sweden for child rights and child health, with a focus on protecting children who grow up in households with alcohol problems. So we have a world-class expert here in Dr. Joanna Lay, and then we have three community activists and community experts from Slovakia, Thailand, and Sweden with us. We recorded this conversation as a live-streamed event on February 15th, 2024, during the Global Awareness Week for Children of Households with Alcohol Problems. There is a pressing need for more action to increase recognition of and support for children of households with alcohol problems. Some community programs do exist, and some advocacy campaigns show promising results along with growing attention to the magnitude and urgency of the problem. And so this event and hopefully this podcast episode are timely conversations where we in Movendi International want to bring together experts in the field of child rights and child health with community leaders so that we can facilitate collaboration and partnership to work together for the protection of children from adverse experiences due to alcohol use problems in the homes where they grow up. Warm welcome to everyone. I think yesterday was Valentine's Day. This week is special in the calendar of Movendi International and many of our member organizations because it's the COA week. In Movendi International, we talk about children of households with alcohol problems. So an awareness week in different parts of the world, in different countries where we try to bring attention to the circumstances, the situation of children who grow up in households and face alcohol problems very often, of course, of their parents. And we have this conversation here today. I'm really happy that we can have this conversation with experts from around the world. We have experts from the global level, Joanna Lay. We have experts from the community work from Thailand, Vinyu, from Sweden, Mona, and from Slovakia, Christina here. And I think it's really great if we can get to listen to and discuss with these experts. So I'll try to guide us through this conversation today. And I think two things are in order to introduce the topic. One is just to give you a sense of how big the problem is. In Europe, there are 2 million children affected in Germany, 2 million in Poland, 2 million in the United Kingdom alone. The EU says there are around 9 million children affected. But if you just look at Poland and Germany, probably there is a large number of children that the countries in the European Union alone are not measuring, that they are affected by their parents' alcohol use problems as they grow up. This is EU high-income region of the world. We know in low- and middle-income countries that children actually prefer to live on the streets than to go home. And in low- and middle-income countries, it's most of the time fathers, men, when they use alcohol and create all kinds of havoc in the lives of children, in the homes, and of course, for the women as well. So we face a massive problem here. We face such a massive problem that we are not even studying. We don't have a good policy response here. And we'll hear from some speakers today about this work to actually make the welfare system, social services, health services help identify and help children that are affected. And of course, also use alcohol policy solutions to protect children better. That's the first thing I wanted to tell you. The second thing is actually personal. I am also affected. I am affected in a second generation. My mom grew up as a child of a father with severe addiction. And I'm only learning this later in life, like now in the last few years, my mom is telling me some of those things. It meant for her to live in orphanages for 2-3 months at a time when no parent could take care of her. It meant for her that she needed to find food, nutritious food from friends and families around her because her own parents wouldn't provide for her. And so it's I'm getting now in this reality from my mother, the emotional dimension of just some facts that I told you before. And my mom is a sibling of four. Two of her siblings don't live anymore. One passed away from liver cirrhosis, so we see how alcohol harm is passed on. One passed away because of suicide, so we see the mental health dimension here. So there are only two siblings left. And I think in addition to the health system response, that social services response, this is what we are seeing and what I think we will hear from all four speakers, that this is a real severe, real crisis situation that the children are experiencing. So I'm very happy that we have the chance to discuss here today. And I would like to get us going with Dr. Joanna Lay, health specialist at UNICEF headquarters in New York. Joanna, you already joined us 2 years ago when we had a similar conversation. So thanks for making this a priority for you and for sharing your expertise. And can you get us started with giving us an overview of the state of the world's children. UNICEF is doing really important work here. Joanna, maybe the first question is, what is the state of the world's children? What is the state of mental health among the world's children?
Great. And thank you so much to you, Mike and Movendi, for drawing such focused attention on this really, really critical issue that's a priority also for UNICEF to help us better understand and talk about how we can mitigate this secondhand alcohol harm in children and adolescents, which we know has significant impact on their health, their well-being, their development from the very first moments of life. And specifically in regards to mental health, I think some of these statistics are also already known, but the global burden of mental health problems is substantial among this population group. 13% of 10 to 19 year olds around the world experience mental health conditions. Anxiety and depression are major contributors to this. And to help us understand that scale, we're talking roughly around 80 million 10 to 14 year olds and 86 million 15 to 19 year olds around the world who experience mental health conditions, and more will be experiencing symptoms of behavioral and emotional problems, even though they don't necessarily reach the threshold of a disorder. Suicide is the fourth leading cause of death for 10 to 19 year olds globally, and it's observed that 50% of mental health conditions start by the age of 14 and 75% by the mid 20s. And I think all of this really to say that this increasing distress that we see among children and adolescents is a stark reflection of the increasingly distressed environments that they're living in. And that is often further compounded by the use of alcohol within the household, within the communities. Right now, we see roughly that in low and middle income countries, an estimated 14% of girls and 18% of boys aged 13 to 15 have reported consumption of alcohol. So this is kind of a bigger picture of the framing, I think, of where children stand and the environments they live in.
These are staggering numbers. And as you give us this overview, Joanna, of the state of the mental health in the world's children, how are you working in UNICEF? I'm really impressed by you addressing this, the role of alcohol as secondhand harm. I think you talked about that alcohol is compounding this overall increasing mental distress. So how do you make sense of it, and how do you work with this as UNICEF, as mental health is more jeopardized in the young people, and then alcohol is coming in? Alcohol is the number one risk factor for disease burden in the youth population in the world. How are you addressing it?
So, you know, I think that's a really good question, Mike. And the approach of UNICEF has always been to kind of take that life course approach, you know, and to intervene across key moments with tailored intervention and tailored strategies across that period. You know, from that life course perspective, secondhand alcohol harm impacts children really from the start of life. We see that exposure to maternal alcohol consumption during pregnancy, that poses a risk to the fetal neural development that can impact cognitive function and behaviors later on in life. So from that perspective, within maternal and newborn health services, antenatal care, prenatal care, prevention and addressing alcohol use from that point is important. And then in early childhood, we know that secondhand alcohol harm can contribute to developmental delays, learning difficulties, emotional behavioral challenges. So I think working from that perspective, UNICEF focuses a lot on the early supporting caregivers and intervening at an early stage. So early childhood development programs that and interventions that focus on that period of life. And then, of course, in middle childhood, and especially as children are transitioning into adolescence, the impact of secondhand alcohol harm on mental health and behavioral outcomes becomes especially apparent. As I've mentioned, we see elevated rates of depression, anxiety, and other mental health problems, which are related. There's also higher rates of adolescent substance use themselves. That includes alcohol, but also initiation of other psychoactive substances, tobacco, cannabis, illicit drugs. Suicide, we see, is another area where research shows us concerning connection between household alcohol use and vulnerability to suicide, suicidal ideation and behavior, where instances of suicidal thoughts and behaviors are reported at higher rates among those who have exposure to household alcohol misuse. And when we say a household, I think we mean parents, of course, but also siblings and other caregivers and family members that might be living together. I was also really touched by your point, Mike, beyond all of this just statistics, the lived experience and perspective of children themselves is so critical, how it can impact their self-esteem, internalized feelings of stigma or shame. And so I think in part of our work, you know, addressing adolescent health through school, through primary health care, through digital platforms is important. And the emphasis also on supporting caregivers is important. I think beyond that, we also look at the environments for which they lived in. We talked a little bit about this because we know that household alcohol use is not an isolated issue. That's something that's compounded by a number of other socioeconomic vulnerabilities. So taking in consideration the environment, and I think for children, the environments that matter a lot, it's school, it's online, it's community, and also at the policy level, intervening and looking at a variety of policies. So long answer to your question, I think that for UNICEF, the approach is really to look across the life stage at the opportunities we have and to be able to tailor interventions from early prevention during pregnancy to targeted strategies supporting children and adolescents and their families across sectors and systems. And I know that our panelists here are going to give really important concrete examples of community level intervention that I think is a very key part to this as well.
Long answers or longer answers, they are most welcome when they are awesome. I think this is really enlightening, super insightful. So I take this with me. I think your point about environment, for example, the secondhand effects, the socioeconomic vulnerabilities that you have mentioned. And Joanna, if you have the chance to stay on a little bit longer, your point about the role of policy and increasing mental ill health in young people overall, and then alcohol's role in this. I think these would be two questions I could ask you later on, if you have a chance to stay a little bit longer. But as you said, you already helped me, Joanna, to get us to some of the community experiences. And I like to have this opportunity to combine what you do at the policy and at the normative level at UNICEF with what we see in Slovakia, Thailand, and Sweden, what can be done in the community. Christina, I would like to come to you. Christina, you are the international president of Movendi International, and you are also the leader of Movendi Slovakia, and you are in Slovakia this week to commemorate the COHAB week in Slovakia. Joanna gave us some staggering figures about secondhand alcohol harm in children. What can you tell us about the size, magnitude of the problem in Slovakia? How big is it? And are the policymakers, is the government, is society aware of the issue, Christina?
Hi, Mike. Hello, everyone. It's really very nice to be with you. Very sad to talk about this topic, but I'm actually really happy that I can talk about it today. If I should reply to your question with the help of numbers, yeah. But if I should reply with the help of statistical numbers from Slovakia, then I would have actually nothing to say, because no one is documenting how many children from households with alcohol problem there are. Of course, we can calculate based on other data, and that I can share with you. And what we know from Slovakia is that 14% of adult Slovak population has serious alcohol problems. We are 5 million, so people living in Slovakia. So even if it was every 10 person, it's already many. This is 14%. And what we understand is that many of these people have children, and these children for sure are not identified anywhere, and they are not getting any help. Because what we know also that out of these 14% of adults, only 27,000 people actually were diagnosed and received help. So imagine the magnitude of the problem. One of the problems, of course, is that in Slovakia, we still are not talking about alcohol problems as such. So then parents, when parents not talk about it and it's a taboo, then of course kids will definitely not be talking about it. So this is the situation. Like, it's really a neglected problem. No one is measuring it. And even if they were, there is also really lack of help. Like, what we understand, not only when it comes to alcohol issues, but in general, mental health problems, as also Joanna was talking about, the help is almost unavailable. There are huge queues in Slovakia for young people to get psychological help. For example, you would need to wait for years to get, especially after the pandemic, it really increased. So there are now several civil society organizations that are trying to help and are developing different online help and this kind of help where you can help many people at once. But it's still really a sad situation.
I like how this conversation is shaping up, because with the Slovak examples that you are sharing, I think you illustrate what Joanna was talking about. I think overall, for example, the pandemic increasing the mental health concerns that children and young people are facing, the pandemic also leading to cuts in already existing services. We see this in a number of countries, but then of course also Slovakia being one of the countries that do very little, provide very little services overall. And I also recognize what you are saying, Christina, from my own family, that when alcohol harm and, like Joanna said, the secondhand harm of alcohol are not discussed at the societal level, the kids, they don't make this analysis that they are affected, like they are internalizing the problem. I think we can hear later also from Mona what that means. And so the kids, they don't look for help either here. That certainly happened to my mom. She never had the concept that she was growing up as a child with a father with severe alcohol use disorder and addiction. In this context that you have now shown us, you already mentioned what some civil society organizations are doing. What are you as Movendi in Slovakia doing, for example, this week and overall? How do you try to make the system more responsive? How do you try to bring some form of help to kids? What are you up to?
Where to start? Because we had to approach this issue from several perspectives. So the easiest one, where we also actually got a small grant, but still we got a grant for being able to bring a method that we have learned from Sweden, from Unis, and Mona will talk about it maybe more, where she got the method from. But we have been able, thanks to being part of an international network, to actually adopt something that is already ready, that didn't cost as much. That was really good, because we wouldn't have those finances. This was a grant of 2,000 euros. So just so you understand what we are talking about. And this method was about how to talk about the problem in schools and with the help of a puppet. But then when we have started, and this we have done a few years ago already, like I think during the pandemic, we started somewhere there. But when we were doing this and when we were talking to teachers who were supposed to be trained, then we understood that the teachers really don't know how to, like, they got the method, but they are still really worried about approaching, start talking about this. They are afraid to be attacked by parents who will think that this is a little bit like interfering too much into the family life. They didn't know what to do when they start open the topic, like what to do then. Like there will be children that they will identify through this, and they will start talking about it. What should they do then? So because of that, we have then last year gathered two ministries, Minister of Health and the Minister of Youth and Education. Then we had the Center for Psychological Help with us. We had representatives from youth centers and also some teachers. And we have organized a roundtable discussion to start putting these puzzles together, to really understand what is there, what is it that the country is missing, and how can we start approaching these problems. And this was the first time ever someone would be discussing this problem on this level. There are no organizations that are really addressing this otherwise. There are organizations for adult children of alcoholics, as they call it. But these are adults who gather and talk about it, but there is no direct help to current kids. So that was the first step. And based on that, there was a huge agreement. Everyone was really happy to be in the meeting. Like, the ministries were really glad. They were thankful that someone is actually doing something about this. It was really obvious that they would like to have regular meetings and start doing something and like develop some kind of concept, how to continue with this work. But it's also obvious that we need to drive the process. It's not that the ministry now will take over and will simply lead and show the way. So this is we have approached it from both ways. We have a concrete method that we can provide for schools and the teachers who would like to do something. So that's very positive. We have some kind of answer, but there is a bigger problem that needs to be addressed, and that's on the system level. And we have started doing something, but we are really far from being done.
One important aspect is to help identify the kids and try to see if there can be some help for the kids, and schools can work. But of course, there needs to be a much better system around those kids. And I appreciate the effort that you are describing here and that you are starting, so to say. There's much to do in Slovakia. I mean, it's quite staggering that the country is not measuring this kind of problem. And I think Joanna explained that this is a generational problem, that if it can be prevented, otherwise it can have severe consequences across the life course. Thanks, Christina. We'll get back to you. I think you are most welcome to share your reflections from what you heard from Joanna, but also now from Vinyu and then Mona later on. Very happy that we have Vinyu with us from Stop Drink Network. Vinyu Srisupachok, a social innovation engineer, project consultant, working for the cultivation of children's positive consciousness and protecting children from risk factors, including alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs at the Stop Drink Network in Thailand. Vinyu, warm welcome. And I would like to begin with the same question for you that I asked Christina. How big is the problem of children growing up in households with alcohol problems in Thailand?
Okay. Sawasdee krap. First of all, I would like to say, like, the data we collect is collect before COVID pandemic. It's collect around 2015, like 7 years ago. And the data, Thailand is the country of the biggest religious people, it Buddhism, and then Muslim. Most big religious, we have the something that the rule, no need to drink, not allowed to drink alcohol. But the fact is, our country population is nearly 70 million people and 20 million household. So it seems that each household allow 3 people, mother, father, son, daughter, and childhood and youth under 18 years old is about 14 million. The study of this research is from Dr. Orathai Wally Wong, International Health Policy Program, show that the children and youth under 18 years old allow 25% was affected by alcohol harm, secondhand alcohol, yes, or it seems that like $3.5 million from 14 million of our youth affected by alcohol. They leave, they approach the leak in the unappropriate environment. They affected the violence such as the severe scolded, abandoned, leave alone, and being hit or assaulted. But only 0.1% or 15,000 people case that sought help from the government agency. And 72% who live in the household have the problem of the heavy drinking. Same number the alcohol harm, 3 million people that affect, 3 million youth affect in the Thailand. This is the big problem in Thailand. Even though we have religious, strong religious like Muslim and Buddhism that don't allow to drink alcohol, but we still drink and it is a big effort. Okay, this is the data we collect before COVID. So I think after COVID, many people, during COVID too, many people lost the job, economic problem. So maybe the problem size, the impact is bad for sure.
Thanks. And I think what you're highlighting here is very similar to, I think, the magnitude of the problem that Christina explained. But it is, of course, remarkable. Thanks for explaining that religion should be a protective factor, Buddhism and Islam in Thailand. It's not a protective factor, as you are saying, Vinyu, for these millions of children that are affected. Thanks also for sharing a little bit what that can mean, abandonment, there's not a caring environment for these children. And so that brings me to my second question. What are you doing, Vinyu? What is Stop Drink Network doing to better protect the rights of these affected children, as we said, to promote the health and the well-being of the children? And are you seeing any results of this work?
We can say that in the big picture, Stop Drink Project approach since kindergarten until youth, until teenager, cover all age range. Yes, but our educational system in Thailand, we can divide to be three or four levels. First level is nursery or kindergarten or childhood. 1 year until 7 years old. And the other level is primary school, 8 years old to 12 years old. And then all of them move to the secondary school, 13 to 15. And after that, they move to the high school, vocational school, college, blah, blah, blah. But the government, we can say that mostly 90% of our school under the government, under the Ministry of Educational System. So our team, we believe that the consciousness is we have to put in the brain at the same, absorb since they're still young. You said, you also have the bad picture, bad memory about your family. Like me too, when I was young, and also my friend who work in Blue Cross in Germany. All of us also have the bad negative memory about alcohol since we still young, still a childhood, 7 years old, like that. So now we think that the first step we have to start to put the in the the white paper, the kids who are very innocent. So our project, childhood, we focus on educate the student who 1 to 7 years old. We can say a nursery or kindergarten student, but we don't use only our team. We try to approach to top down and upside, bottom up.
Yes.
We set up from our fund, start from the bottom up, try to find the retired people, retired teacher and expertise teacher who love our idea to like focus on how to train the mindfulness, the consciousness, because consciousness is something that can prevent everything. So we apply since like they're still in the nursery. And then we got the record, we got the data, we got the research background. Then we present to the educational ministry. Then the educational ministry also like try to make a working group under the announcements officially from the Ministry of Education since 5 years ago. So that's why we can work from two top, two sides of view, bottom up and bottom up and top down. Okay. And we use the key message we at the background of our slide, our picture. We try to focus on three key stakeholder: teacher, caregiver first. Second, lesson learned for the student. And the third one is parents. We use the building the skill like a life skill through the asking the question, reflect, connect, and apply. By using the six activities of early childhood education, something like how to like experience promotion, blah, 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 little activity, song, educational game, free activity. And then we try to expand. This year, we can say that half of our country by the number of the province, 27 provinces in Thailand, we work around 35 provinces in Thailand, we apply this model into the nursery and kindergarten school by the order of the educational ministry and by the good connection of our team bottom up to work. Yes. So that's why we try to use the use the government support and also do by ourselves, not wait for the government. Yes, the either way of us.
I think in what you are telling us here, there are some remarkable best practices working with the Ministry of Education. I think, like I said, for Christina, this gives a really good illustration of what Joanna UNICEF talked about, this kind of life course approach. But it's really, and Joanna mentioned also the educational risks that come from kids being affected by alcohol problems in the household. And so it's really good to see that you are able to work with the Ministry of Education in so many provinces across Thailand. So thank you very much, Vinyu, for this, sharing with us how this can be done in also a very difficult situation in Thailand as you face. That brings us to Mona. Mona, thank you very much for your patience here. Of course, I hope it's interesting for you to listen to the other three experts. Mona is the president of UNIS. And UNIS is a social movement in Sweden working to protect and promote the health and rights of children. I think it's fair to say, Mona, with the focus on children of households with alcohol problems. So it's really a pleasure and honor that you can join us here today, Mona. And same question for you to start us off. We heard from Slovakia and from Thailand. How big is the problem of children affected by alcohol problems in the households where they live in Sweden?
Well, as you know, this is always difficult to find certain numbers, but there are some research being done here. And a couple of years ago, the researchers put other resources together to find out how many are there actually. So we usually use three numbers. The first one is about 20% of children in Sweden have sometime during their childhood, before they are 18, one or more parents with alcohol problems. So that's every fifth child. And 15% of children in Sweden have been negatively affected by a parent's drinking. And the smaller number, 3.5%, that is children in Sweden who have parents who have received hospital treatment, or the parents have died because of alcohol problems. And even this small number, 3.5%, that's really high when you think about it. I guess we all know that before you get treatment in a hospital because of alcohol problem, or you die, you have had big problems during a long, long time, and that has certainly affected the people closest to you, and especially children. And like if you have a class of 30 students, that means that one of them have or will have before their 18th birthday a parent who dies because of alcohol, or who is treated in hospital because of that. So that's really a lot. And addition to that, of course, because this is only alcohol, there are other sorts of addiction and violence in families and lots of other problems. And sometimes I think, is it really important? Do we really have to have these numbers? Does it matter for this one child who is affected? And then I think, well, maybe not. But, well, it says something about the magnitude of the problem. And it's also relevant for everyone who meets children. If they think that, oh, this is very rare, maybe I might find one child during all my life as a teacher who has this problem. If they know that every fifth child might be affected by this problem, then they put other glasses on. They have to look in another way on the children they meet. So that's the most important thing, I think, with the numbers.
Mona, I have a difficult question for you. Before I ask you what UNICEF is doing, Sweden is a country with world-class alcohol policy in place, because Sweden as a country, as a society, has a high level of awareness of the need to protect people from alcohol harm. But why is this problem, and you gave us these staggering figures now, like one in five kids, why is this not a political priority? And, you know, we see in the United Kingdom, there is a parliamentary group that looks at what can be done. There are members of parliament in other countries that come out in public and say that they are a child, like Christina said, child affected by their parents' alcohol addiction. Why is Sweden not further ahead with the environment that we live in here?
It's really a great question. I think the answer is that it touches on my own drinking behavior for lots of people. And that comes really close.
Yeah.
So I think that's why.
Yeah.
It's like doctors in Sweden, they don't really think, you know, doctors, they are well educated. They know how to look at research, but still they don't even get their heart issue thing. When you drink even small amounts of alcohol, it's a risk for you. It's like they don't believe it because they drink themselves. So
yeah.
I think it's actually that.
That's a great answer. I think that brings us also to discussing solutions. I think Christina mentioned this also, that the overall discourse in society matters, and how the groups with power, how they contribute to the discourse or not. So thanks. I'm happy I could ask you this difficult question. Let's ask one more for you, much easier question, but nonetheless, not the less important. What is UNICEF doing, Mona? Christina already referred to you. You are helping other member organizations in Movendi International take up important practices, but tell us little bit of the highlights of how UNICEF is working to protect the rights of affected children here.
One thing we do is that every year we ask the 290 local authorities in Sweden about what support they offer children with parents who have an addiction. So that's a big survey, and we publish it in an annual report. And together with these numbers, we also have lots of really great articles about good practice we want to spread, because there are so many good things happening, and we need to tell the world, in this case Sweden, about these good examples they can follow. So that's one thing we do, this annual report, and we try to spread this information and other through seminars and articles in newspapers and so on. We also work a lot with education. Adults who meet children and young people, they need to know what challenges these children have, how to discover them, how to give them support, and so on. Sometimes we are invited to meet students who are going to work with children and young people. And during the pandemic, when we couldn't do that kind of work, we also built what we call a portal of knowledge about children in families with addiction. And that is a really great resource pack targeting adults who meet children and young people in their work or as a volunteer. So there are some modules with a film lasting 10 to 20 minutes, topics to discuss, and where to learn more. So these packages work well for watching with your work group, for instance. And then we also develop methods to talk to children about having an adult with who drinks too much or have other problems. And the one Christina referred to in Sweden, it's called Ludde. In Slovakia, he's called Happy. We imported him from Switzerland, and there he's called Bobby. In Scotland, he's called Rory. And the pack, we work with this targeting 5 to 9 year olds. And to have a bigger impact, it's not unis who go out to school, but we educate people in schools, in preschools, in people who are working voluntarily, in social security, and so on. And they think the method is great. It's really a good way to talk about how can it be to have a parent who drinks too much. So that's one of our, it's the best method we have. And in the beginning of April, we're releasing another one, which is much broader. It doesn't only target addiction problems. It's a material for 10 to 13 year olds, and it's called Classmates. That will be a book and a resource pack. Much broader, can be about bullying, HBTQ, friendship, love, living in a family with little money, and so on. So that's the next thing. And we're going to build a support site for 8 to 12 years old, living with, and it will be about living with an adult who has addiction problems.
This work that Vinyo and Stop Drink Network are doing, Movendi SK and you in Sweden, is really impressive. I think it touches people when we understand the problem that you are addressing. And I think it's really important just to take a moment and say congrats. Really cool on those two new products. I think this material that covers, if I summarize it, youth issues. I think it really also underlines or goes back to the point that Joanna made, that these issues are broader, and we need to do everything we can to protect the mental health of young people. So this is really cool. Thanks for sharing this year. I'll be very happy to see and to figure out how we can share it with others. And then, of course, big congrats to this additional work that you can do now scaling up the important work that you do. So thank you, Mona. I think you highlighted some things that Christina talked about. For example, the importance of empowering the educators, right? Christina, you mentioned that you did this kind of program and then the educators wanted to run it, and then they started feeling hesitant and they started wondering about how the parents would respond and others. So empowering the educators, I take this from you, is very important, Mona. I will ask a question to all three of you, Mona, Christina, and Vinyu. As you listen to each other, I think we can understand that you are grappling with the similar magnitude of the problem and similar challenges as you try to address the problem. So did you hear about solutions or approaches from others here that you would highlight that you take with you, for example, or that you would like to explore more?
I think that I have many reflections, not only about what I could learn from, but there were some really also strong statements here. Like, for example, when Mona mentioned that, like, it's really, we need to work with people who meet kids and like how they approach it. And I can really share that also, like when we were talking with the teachers, and it's also connected to what Mona said about the answer, the doctors have their own alcohol use, and that's why they don't know how to address and start deal with this issue. And we could see it also with teachers, the meeting, the training about the method, it has become for a while discussion about their own childhood, about their own experiences. And they really need to go through it to be able to start talking about it. And they didn't do it when they were studying pedagogics. The whole system has to change. But what I would take from this conversation also, because I know a little bit less about what happens in Thailand, I really appreciate Vinyu talking about the consciousness of kids and like how to work with that so it doesn't get stuck somewhere that you carry it with you and you discover when you are adult, but you have already developed lots of dysfunctional behavior patterns and all that. So this is fantastic. What we have done in Slovakia also yesterday was the exhibition where kids got to reflect on their feelings. Like, we have focused on happiness, but just to understand, when do I feel happy? What makes me happy? And they processed it, and then they shared it with their parents. And parents could see that it's not alcohol and sitting in bars and doing these things, but it's simple things like just having breakfast with family and having birthday party with friends and going to zoo, like not big things. But that they also get to reflect it, because there is this strong marketing coming at you, telling you that you are not happy and you should be happy about other things.
I think this is super helpful. I'm making a list here for myself of how we can take this conversation forward. Mona, Vinyu, did you reflect anything from the conversation here that you want to highlight, that you want to pick up?
Yeah, I think one thing that Vinyu is making clear is that with this, like the lesson plans and so, you make it easy for teachers to talk about these issues. And I think that's the main point to take away from this conversation.
I think this is a great point, Mona, and that we need to, you mentioned earlier healthcare professionals, doctors. I think there are these groups in society with more power than ordinary citizens. They all need help to figure out their own relation to alcohol and then how to talk about it with their constituency, teachers and school kids, doctors and their patients. Thanks, Mona. Vinyu, I interrupted you. Please.
Yeah, sorry. Just to say thank you for thank you for your kindness. Okay, I can say that I love the process, like the partner that Mona recommended. And also I think about something happiness approach and try to find an alternative to make everyone happiness mindset. And the one thing that I would like to highlight, we would like to start to the other level, other age group, in primary school, try to use the same model from the childhood, early childhood to the other, Mona said, because the teacher work is a lot of work, if they got the manual, it should be good. So, but for now, like the new generation, flood that information through their brain, from social media, from everything. So, only one thing, this like consciousness, we have to use that way, because we cannot fight with the capitalism or like the big money of advertisements, or the popularity that the crazy guy, crazy girl who just show to drink. We cannot stop the advertisement or something that pop up in our kids. So we have to focus on like how to implement the consciousness and try to find out something like a happiness way, like a Krishna and Mona show the babe, the bear, try to find something, and buddy like an anchor guy, because in Thailand the family problem is bigger. It maybe seem like everywhere in the world that broken family, the children live with the grandfather or the other family member, because everyone have to go to work in the big city. So the children have to live alone in the rural or in somewhere during the working time. Just that, I would like to like use your idea, try to find the alternative of happiness and something like the door to representative of our project. Thank you.
And if I may, I would like to ask you, can you share one solution that you want to highlight that you haven't spoken about yet? And before I give you the floor, I'll call on you. Joanna had to leave, but I can tell you three things that she shared just briefly. Three key solutions from UNICEF: strengthen public policy and public interventions to reduce population level alcohol consumption and harm, secondhand effects to children, number one. Number two, focus on building mental health and substance use capacity and services in primary health care. So something we mentioned throughout this conversation. And number three, increase investment to enhance schools and community spaces where children and young people can go to receive psychosocial support, mental health services, and so on. So this is from Joanna, three solutions. Vinyu, if we can begin with you, what would be one solution that you want to highlight very briefly, please?
Okay, so it seems like a key solution. It's like a sandbox. The kindergarten or early childhood have to practice themselves by following four life skills, like practice awareness, self-esteem, and other critical thinking, the problem thinking, like a growth mindset, something like that, and creativity for like finding the alternative, emotional and stress management, collaboration with the self and the other, like a self-esteem too. We would like to like a four life skill have to be deployed, applied by doing like a on the job training, like a play, apply in the classroom. Learning by action is better than learning by listening. Okay.
I can imagine that the world would be better if all children in the world would get these life skills, these four. Mona, what's the one solution that you want to highlight?
I'm going to say two. The first one is, which we have touched upon, knowledge in general education for everyone who's going to work with children and young people, but also who's going to work with adults who have an addiction problem, and systematic work in lots of places. For instance, that when you meet people with addiction, you have to ask them the question, do you have children? That's so important.
Yes.
And if you do that all the time, everyone, then you have a package. What do I do when they say, yes, I have?
Yeah.
It's the people close to that child. That is safety. Not only people who seem to be the kind of persons who have problems, but everyone. So that systematic work.
So life skills training for children as early as possible, empowering the educators, basically everyone who has responsibility for children, and making sure we identify children at the point of contact with adults that have alcohol use problems. Christina, what is your one solution to wrap this conversation up today?
So I have four, but because and this is also really very concrete thing that comes from this the round table that we had with the decision makers or the government. Actually, all of them were saying like we need to really change policies, and they were really frustrated by marketing. Like whatever you do, the marketing undermines everything that you are doing. So that is one thing. But if I should remove then the policy answer, then it's the change of the norm. And I would agree really much with Mona also that we need to work with adults actually. And as I have also presented, adults don't know how to talk about it. They feel embarrassed. Many things are happening. And I think we as organizations that are really dealing with these topics, we need to dare through our activities. We need to start building this trust in our society. I really can see it with Movement Slovakia, which is a small organization. Even if you want to talk about kids and how they suffer in a way, you are not accepted just like that because you are talking about people's behavior that have been there around for many, many years. So you have to start building the trust, and then you can open these difficult topics, and you need to create spaces where you can start talking about it.
Thank you, Vinyu. Thank you, Mona. Thank you, Christina. These are really powerful solutions. Everything comes together. Like, we need the public policy interventions because they generate resources. They reduce the pressure of the problem overall. And these resources should be reinvested in the system that then makes these spaces available, that allows for the doctors, for the teachers to have better trainings, for example, and maybe also for other ministries, like we have heard from Thailand, to come together and do this work. So thank you very much for this conversation, policy, community, together in the effort to protect our children and to improve and promote the health and rights of our children. Vinyu, Mona and Christina, I thank you very much. I thank all our participants here today. And that's it for today. Thank you and take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank
bye.
You. Bye.
Thanks to our guests, Dr. Joanna Lay, Christina Sperkova, Vinyu Srisupachok and Mona Örjes. This podcast episode is part of Movendi International's work to support an evidence-based approach to protecting more people from alcohol harm. In the show notes, we share resources relating to the topics we covered in this conversation, such as the research, the reports, and even books that we mentioned, and the campaigns we talked about. We enjoy hearing from our listeners. Your feedback, your questions, and your suggestions for future topics and guests is all most welcome. You can find my contact details in the show notes as well. If you like our work with the Alcohol Issues podcast, please subscribe. Please feel free to leave a comment and rate our show and spread the word. In this way, you help more people to find this podcast. The Alcohol Issues podcast is made by Mike Dünnbier, Ariadna Sanchez-Codern and Christina Sperkova with support from Pierre Anderson. The theme music is from Alex Grohl. That's it for the Alcohol Issues podcast this week. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay well and safe and talk to you next week. We'll be right back.